You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Coming up, we'll learn about the history of string cheese. Now we're getting into the swing of holiday shopping season. For the science lovers in your life, Gemma Tarlack of Discover Magazine has put together a gift guide of some of this year's best science books. Gemma, happy almost Thanksgiving.
Happy almost Thanksgiving to you and everyone out there in listener land.
Well, we're so glad you could join us. And we'll ask you first, was this a good year for science books?
Oh, I think so. You know, it's always a good year for science books. And that's partly because there are so many really gifted writers who are writing about science, but it's also because this has been a year of tremendous discovery and innovation in a number of fields, and we're starting to see that turn up in books written about those innovations.
Well, I think we're always excited to look up into the skies and the stars and see what's happening up there and find out interesting things. One of the books on your list is called The Planet Factory, Exoplanets and the Search for a Second Earth. Where did that come out of?
Yeah, this is by astrophysicist Elizabeth Tasker. And one of the things I really love about this book, and strongly recommend it to anyone who, you know, you keep hearing this headline, oh, we found this almost Earth, or oh, we found this planet that might be habitable, and oh, this, oh, that. But it's really hard if you're just listening to a short segment, and it's really hard if you actually try to read the academic papers written off these discoveries to understand, you know, just as an ordinary person, mm-hmm. not necessarily an astrophysicist, well, what does that really mean? What is the Goldilocks zone? How does it work? What are the chances of finding a second Earth out there? And Elizabeth Tasker does a really fun job of breaking it down, explaining everything. You'll be an expert if you read the book. And the best thing about it is you'll enjoy reading the book. It's fun, it's lively, it's engaging, and I think it's a great read.
And I guess we should say, you know, I asked if it was a good year for science books, but really what we're talking about is good science books for the general public.
Yes, absolutely, because, you know, there are tons of great science papers out there that I get to read every day for my job, but sometimes they don't always translate for someone who may not be as much of, say, a dinosaur geek as I am. So it's really great when a book comes along on a topic that's of interest, that is written so anyone can pick it up, start reading, learn stuff, and enjoy doing it.
Well, staying up there in the atmosphere, the Zoomable Universe, an epic tour through cosmic scale from almost everything to nearly nothing. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And I think this is a great book for maybe the more visually minded people in your life, again, of all ages, so from maybe tween up. And not that this book has a lot of pictures, but it does, but the information is presented in a way that if you're very visually oriented, as, you know, I am, for example, it's very engaging, it's lively, it feels, I know this is going to sound weird, but it feels almost like a video game that's been put on paper in the way they take you from one environment and one scale to the next. It's a fast, fun read as well.
Well, and getting a sense of scale in the universe is one of the more mind-boggling things. So it sounds like a great way to at least start to get our minds wrapped around that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I think it's fairly universal. People love to learn about the relationship of human beings to animals and learn about what makes animals tick. So one of the books is The Animal Among Us, How Pets Make Us Human. And that sounds really interesting. I never really thought about pets making us more of what we are.
Yeah, and this is written by anthropologist John Bradshaw. You may have heard of his other books, Cat Sense.
He's been on the network many times.
Yes, and he delivers often very dense scientific material in a beautifully accessible way where you feel like you're just reading, you know, a really good novel. You don't feel like you're, I'm being educated. and that's what I tried to do in terms of all the books we included in our gift guide this year. Anyway, he really takes a lot of information out there from a lot of different perspectives. You know, there's some anthropology, there's some archaeology, there's a lot of neuroscience, like what actually happens to your brain when you are snuggling with a warm puppy. You know, what happens? Well, he kind of goes down that road and shows you that in a lot of ways, our relationships with these animals we've domesticated really, in a way, kind of domesticated us, if that makes sense. It really, we kind of walked the evolutionary road together once we domesticated the animals.
Gemma Tarlak of Discover Magazine is sharing a gift guide of some of the year's best science books with us. And Gemma, I love the name of this book, and I love what it is because it sounds like a great thing for families to dig into. It's called The Electric Pickle, 50 experiments from the periodic table from aluminum to zinc. What kind of experiments are they?
Okay, full disclosure, I really wish I had had this book when I was a kid because I would have just eaten it, you know, not literally, but okay, you can make a flamethrower powered by cornstarch.
Oh, I was hoping it was a flamethrowing pickle, but, you know, can't get it all right.
You can make a pickle light up. They give you a way to conduct electricity with a pickle.
That's awesome.
And that's fun. You can create your own crystals and do all kinds of experiments with, for example, what fluoride does to an eggshell. Again, this is a very fun book for the whole family. And if you do the cornstarch flamethrower, you know, just be careful. Safety first, folks. But, yeah, you can actually make a flamethrower powered by cornstarch. And it, what I love about it is the materials are all probably sitting in your house right now. You don't have to go out and buy a fancy kit or anything. And it's very presented in a very kind of, you know, steps one, two, and three, here's what you need to do. But at the same time, it's very lively, it's very fun, and I think it'll really interest kids in a hands-on kind of way.
And what age range would you say this would be best for?
Well, I think, again, you know, tween and up. I think with the right amount of adult supervision, you could go younger, but it's really, I think the children who will have the most benefit from this are children who are old enough to start holding on to some of the concepts that are being demonstrated scientifically. But, you know, if you've got a 5-year-old and a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old, take them all out to the yard and build a cornstarch flamethrower.
I like take them out to the yard. Don't let them do it in the kitchen.
Well, yeah. Well, some of them, a lot of them you can do in the kitchen, not the flamethrower, folks.
So we've talked about a few books that are kind of lab science-based, but this one is kind of more social science-based. Swearing is Good for You, The Amazing Science of Bad Language. What's the premise there?
Well, you know, the whole idea is language is this living thing, and different ways of expressing it convey different things about the person. It can be, you know, it can be an outlet. It can be a way of kind of signaling belonging. It can be all these different things. And it turns out that swearing is pretty much, you know, it's activating parts of the brain that are related to intelligence and curiosity and creativity. And it's not just that you were brought up in a terrible household with no manners. It's not that at all. It actually can signal a lot of intellectual curiosity and, as I said, intelligence and all these good things. And I'm going to dwell on those because I swear a lot. So
I was going to say, I know a lot of people who are going to like this just from the title.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, it's been a year of some heavy and tough news and world happenings. This one caught my eye, The Archipelago of Hope, Wisdom and Resilience from the Edge of Climate Change. Who's the author on that one?
This is Glebwe Gordetsky, and I apologize if I've mispronounced his name, but it's a long one. So sorry about that, Gleb. However, you have written a wonderful book, and it's one of the rare feel-good stories as we're in this period of not only of science documenting climate change already underway, but, you know, it's become politicized. It's one of those topics that it's probably the last topic you'd want to raise at the table tomorrow during Thanksgiving dinner, because in addition to the science, which can be very depressing, there's all this politicization that has overlain the actual scientific issue. So what he does is he goes out and he spends a lot of time with various indigenous people in Ecuador and Finland and Canada, and really gets to know how they view their environment, how they look at climate, how they look at what role it plays in their culture, and how they are adapting to a new world. And it's very, you know, some of it is sobering and some of it is a little depressing, but it is very hopeful and very optimistic in terms of, you know, we're a pretty resilient, adaptive species. And whatever you want to say about how climate change has come about, it's here. it's ongoing, and we have to find a way forward. And I love that he presents kind of a very uplifting, optimistic, we can do this way through the eyes of Indigenous people who are already experiencing climate change on a level that many of us are not yet experiencing it.
And Gemma, just in the last 15 seconds or so, is there a book on the list that we didn't touch on that you want to make sure we make note of?
Yes, The Quotable Darwin by Janet Brown. I love it. It is Charles Darwin, selections from his letters and writings. Very real, very rich. He talks about a billiard table driving the horrid species out of his head as he's working on a draft of his Origin of Species. It's very fun, and you see Charles Darwin from a completely different perspective.
Well, Gemma, thanks so much for joining us today, and have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You as well.
Gemma Tarlak is a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. She joined us to share her science book gift guide, which you can find a link to on the Ideas Network Facebook page.